Football Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hub Arkush, and along with Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkush, it's our great pleasure to bring you this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly on the radio, where every week we try and bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors from around the NFL, both on and off the field.
We'll discuss the comments of Tony Dungy on Michael Sam, and also the legacy of Broncos owner Pat Bowlen.
The Chiefs opened camp without arguably their most important player, and the 49ers hope giving Joe Staley an extension will send a similar message to Alex Boone and Vernon Davis to report.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Hi, everyone. Thank you for joining us again this week for Pro Football Weekly on the radio. Training camps are open. The NFL season is here. We couldn't be more excited about it. The proverbial we. I am Hub Arkush, and I am joined, as I am each week here on Pro Football Weekly on the radio, by Eric Edholm of YahooSports.com and Shutdown Corner, a must-read for NFL fans, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And Arthur Arkush from Chicago Football Magazine, ChicagoFootball.com, and USA Today Sports Weekly. And gentlemen, camps are open, so there's all kinds of stories, but we've got to start with the biggest one from the middle of the week, because Tony Dungy doesn't make a lot of mistakes, but he clearly stepped in it earlier this week by saying flat out he would not have drafted Michael Sam. He, at the time, indicated that it wasn't because of his sexual proclivity, and then in backpedaling, or moonwalking, as you will, for the next 24, 48 hours, continued to stress that he thinks that Michael Sam should have his opportunity to play in the NFL, talked about the distraction. But, Eric, I'll come to you first. There's no way out of this one. I mean, you can't say you shouldn't have drafted Michael Sam and then try and explain it away.
Well, let me just be devil's advocate for a minute. Let me say it this way. I thought there was actually an interesting angle to what Dungy said at first, which is, how do you weigh a potential media firestorm that comes with a player who, you know, was graded as a seventh-round pick? He almost went undrafted. I thought that's actually an interesting narrative. But as you pointed out, when Dungy came back, he made a statement and said, you know, it has nothing to do with his sexuality. But then to go on the Dan Patrick show and say, I don't approve of his lifestyle, you start questioning the authenticity of what Dungy's saying. His view, which is, I don't want the distractions in my locker room, might be shared by, who knows, a dozen NFL decision makers around the league. That's a fascinating story that I don't think has been developed enough. Now, nobody's going to say it on the record, and I admire Tony for saying what a lot of people wouldn't say, but at the same time, it seems like it's not a very authentic thing to say when you're trying to justify it and not being, you know, consistent in the way he's doing so. So that was what I had the biggest problem with.
Well, Eric, very reasonable points, but anybody who knows Tony Dungy, and for those of us on this show and in the media, you know Tony Dungy, you know that he probably, and as he has acknowledged, doesn't approve of his lifestyle.
Right.
And so, regardless of what your other reasoning is, Arthur, my point is, Tony, you're in the media now, just don't say it. Just stay away from the subject. And to me, end a conversation, because I agree with Eric. I mean, you know, there certainly can be business points here, but at the end of the day, it's a no-win situation. Why would you go there?
A no-win situation, and while I agree with a lot of what Eric said as well, I guess the part I can't get past here is that Michael Sam isn't the distraction at the moment. Tony Dungy, obviously, is the distraction. So that's what
a great point.
Is ultimately, you know, really the whole point here. And that's what makes it so bizarre that he's talking about it being a distraction. No one had really talked about Michael Sam at all for the most part since the whole Oprah reality show was axed. And he's went about his offseason fairly quietly. Obviously, things were going to pick up in training camp as naturally more media attention flocks to every team. But that's what's really puzzling to me. And Dungy's a guy who has been very progressive in the past on certain issues. He certainly reached out to players who were looking to sort of revive their careers. That's obviously a little bit different than Michael Sam, but that's what made it a little bit disappointing to me. Though I do agree with, you know, some of the points that Eric made there. I think there's some interesting stuff, and I'm sure Tony Dungy is not alone in his opinion that, you know, maybe he doesn't approve of Michael Sam's sexuality and him being in the NFL for that reason. But again, that's what was kind of dumbfounding to me about the whole issue. There's no way getting out of it, like you said.
You know, you certainly can make the point that yes, the distraction is an issue, that the coach and the GM have to look at the whole football team situation. But of all people, Tony Dungy in particular, the man who championed the rehab and return to football of Michael Vick, to be saying this guy shouldn't have gotten his chance, and again, he then danced afterwards and said, well, he should get a chance, he just wouldn't have gotten it from me. there's too much going on here for him to explain it away. It was a big mistake. Now, very unfortunate news out of Denver. This has been an open secret for some time. Pat Bowlen has stepped down from the day-to-day operation and from his duty as president of the Denver Broncos. He is suffering from Alzheimer's, and Joe Ellis, who has been basically running the team for some time now anyway, will officially take over as president of the ball club. But you know, Eric, Pat Bowlen, not only one of the most successful owners in the National Football League based on the results of his team and his organization and the games that they've won, but one of the classier individuals that we've seen in the game, one of the more progressive owners. And, you know, certainly here at Pro Football Weekly, all of our thoughts are with him and his family as he battles a very difficult situation.
No question about it. I mean, he's very extremely popular in the Denver area, well-respected by his fellow owners, a very influential owner at one point. I mean, when he took the team over in 1984, the Broncos had endured years of losing at that point since their Super Bowl appearance in the late 70s. The team was facing bankruptcy. He had made his fortune in sort of the oil and gas industries, helped turn this franchise around, got them a new stadium a few years back, 10 years back or so. And they've made six Super Bowls in his watch, about one every 5 years. They finally won back-to-back titles with John Elway. You look at what Bowlen did with the broadcast committee. I mean, broadcast revenue is everything to the NFL, and he was a huge part of that. So a real giant amongst the NFL owners, and yet another big-name owner in the NFL of a generation ago that has stepped away.
I think everyone knows or has guessed at this point, Arthur is one of my sons, and his grandfather, my father-in-law, is in the final stages of a long, long battle with Alzheimer's. It is something that we know a great deal about. It is a difficult situation. It is not the end of life or a death sentence, and so again, we wish the absolute best for Pat Bowlen, his family, the extended Denver Broncos family, and nothing but good thoughts for them going forward. We take a quick commercial break here, and we're back with more in just a moment. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly, and once again, training camps are open across the National Football League. Your favorite team is out there now. Thanks to the 2011, we can't really call it the new collective bargaining agreement anymore. It's hard to believe that the player's already in the fourth year of that 10-year deal. But thanks to the 11 CBA and radical changes that were made as to what players can and can't do both during the course of the season and in training camp, almost no one has pads on yet. That is happening Saturday, Sunday, Monday of next week. But training camp's open, teams going at it, and with that, of course, comes holdouts. We will talk about a few or at least a few potential holdouts again. We have to tape the show to hit our roughly 100 markets around the country over the weekend. So as of late Friday, the word was that Jamaal Charles was very happy, unhappy, I should say, with the Kansas City Chiefs. On average salary, the 13th highest paid running back in the National Football League, arguably the best or at least one of the top three or four heading into this season. I guess you'd say along with Shady McCoy and Adrian Peterson and Matt Forte, Charles certainly one of that group. And Arthur, you know, he's not working for slave wages. He's scheduled to make it. Well, his cap hit's about $4.7 million this year. The deal was front-end loaded that he did in 2010. Will actually make about $3.8 million this year. But he should be paid higher than the 13th highest paid back in the league, or at least that's his position. Be curious to see how the Chiefs react.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating. Obviously, they've got some other, you know, pending, more big deals down the pipeline. Alex Smith, Justin Houston, other premier players in big parts of the fabric of this organization. But I would make the argument that not only does Charles mean more to the Chiefs than any other player on that club, but you can make a strong argument he means more to his team than any other non-quarterback around the league. They just depend on him so much, and it's kind of scary to think about where an offense that already kind of lacks some firepower in the passing game would be without Charles. So, like you said, 13th in the league in terms of running back average salaries. That is nowhere near in line with the production he's had the past several seasons. And it will be fascinating to see where they go from here. We've seen the Chiefs take a hard line stance on some other players. I just don't know if they're going to be in position to do that here. But again, I don't know if they're going to be in any other likely position with these other big deals that they also need to get worked out soon.
Well, that's the great and the difficult thing about the NFL salary cap. Unlike the other sports, you understand this one. It's pretty clear. It's a hard cap. Here's the number. You got to hit it. And the Chiefs do have other problems. And, you know, Arthur brings up a great point, Eric, about Alex Smith. You know, at draft time, there were rumors flying hot and heavy that Andy Reid was truly truly enamored with Johnny Football, and he came off the board one pick in front of them in the first round. Some suggested they had held off on Alex Smith in case they got their guy. They didn't. I don't know how you don't try and extend Alex Smith after the season he had, and more importantly, that playoff game in Indianapolis, even though he couldn't win it for them by themselves. Would you agree that Alex Smith is probably first up on the list before they can do anything with Jamaal Charles?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, you almost have to look back and say, boy, did they really need to give Dwayne Bowe that kind of money? I mean, he had one big game last year. It was in the playoff loss to the Colts. And, you know, otherwise it's sort of been a little bit of a disappointment, at least in the last couple of years. So, yeah, I mean, Smith is their best option, really their only option right now. You know, they drafted Aaron Murray in round five. They've got Chase Daniel, but I don't think anyone's counting on either one of those guys to start this season. So, you know, Alex wants the bigger money in the longer years, but I think it might be smarter for them to sort of seek a 3 or 4 year deal. And here's a fun game to play. I mean, just look at their offense right now and say, how many of the Chiefs starters minus Charles would start for other NFL teams? There aren't a lot of them. You know, even Eric Fisher, the number one pick last year, still has a long way to go to prove himself. So, you know, Charles has got him in a corner here. He's got them in a great position. Alex Smith, I think not as much, but still very favorable position for two of their best offensive players.
Yeah, I actually had that note for a little later in the show. Eric Fisher, who was questionable at best at right tackle last year, moves to left tackle this year to protect the blind side of Alex Smith after Brandon Albert moves on to Miami. So definitely some cap issues in Kansas City. Now, Arthur, I mentioned Johnny Football. Surprising announcement from Browns camp, and Mike Pettine, the coaches there, saying that they expect to name a starting quarterback for the third preseason game. Now, that's not unusual. The third preseason game, the big one for most teams. They want their starters in place. But you would have thought with the battle between Manziel and Brian Hoyer that that they might have taken a little longer. And what I'm hearing is that Hoyer is the clear front runner here, that it's going to take a miracle. I mean, if Johnny Manziel will be the starter at some point before the 14 season is over. But I think it would be surprising if he wrests that job from Hoyer as soon as 3 weeks into training camp.
Yeah, that's the same thing I'm hearing. And while it is perhaps a little bit surprising, just because that third preseason game is kind of when, you know, the closest example of the bullets really flying that you're going to see in the regular season, I think it's definitely going to influence the way Mike Pettine and, you know, and the rest of the organization is going to go about this competition. I think you're going to see more guys, at least the top two, of course, and Hoyer and Manziel get, you know, more work in the first and second preseason games where normally they wouldn't. You're going to see a very much a split share of the reps, the first team reps during camp to give each of these guys as good of a chance to win the job as possible. So while Hoyer may be the front runner, that is what I'm hearing as well. I do think this is very much an open competition, as Mike Pettine said, and we'll see if Johnny Manziel can get in the playbook and see what he's able to do in this competition.
Hey, Eric, one other holdout story, and again, this is the difficulty of taping the show for mass markets, but late in the week, it looked like Andre Johnson and the Houston Texans either were going to or had kissed and made up. I'm not sure anybody really ever understood why Andre Johnson was absent from Texans minicamps as it is, but there's no other likely end for that one. You may not be happy with the quarterback situation, but it looks like all is well with the Texans and Andre Johnson.
Yeah, you're right about that. I mean, we heard that his frustration was, you know, the rebuilding situation, all that. And then word comes out there's this $1 million bonus that he thought he was getting that he should have gotten that he didn't get. And it just seems like a muddled mess. There's frustration, I'm sure, that it spreads over a number of topics for Johnson, who's been excellent the past two seasons, but really has nothing to show for it. So, yeah, I think at some point they're gonna solve their differences, come to a middle ground, and he's gonna be Houston Texan this year. I don't expect him to be traded or for him to hold out for an extended period of time.
Yeah, one thing that's been made clear is what I'm trying to say by the future Hall of Famer Johnson's camp and the Houston Texans is that Andre Johnson and new coach Bill O'Brien have been in regular contact throughout. It should end well there. We take a quick break. More NFL news in just a moment. Arthur Arkush, Eric Edholm, and me. I'm Hub Arkush, bringing you Pro Football Weekly on the radio. And Eric, good news for a couple teams and players on the injury front. We will start in New England first, where Bill Belichick says that Rob Gronkowski has been cleared by Patriot doctors and should be full go from day one of training camp. That was always the expectation, but after the injury muddled 2013 season, it still has to be very good news for both player and team.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, after suffering the forearm injury that would never heal last year, and then the back stuff that complicated his return to the field prior to 2013, you know, he gets back on the field, makes a huge impact. The Patriots look like they're off and running. Then he suffers the ACL in December against the Browns. So that was a huge blow to the team last year. And I thought at the time, I mean, we're looking at an 8-month timetable. There's no way he's going to be ready for the start of camp, a likely pup list candidate, you know, possibly somebody who wouldn't be seen or heard from until the 6th week of the season. So, you know, you've got Gronk and, you know, he's on whose line is it anyway? He's jumping around. He looks great. And now Belichick gives him the full clearance to practice. I do expect him to probably play lightly in the preseason, maybe have a snap count in practice, but yeah, having Gronk back obviously makes this a whole different offense.
And Eric, good news as well for the Atlanta Falcons. They will have Julio Jones ready to go from day one.
Yeah, same kind of setup with Gronk. I mean, I think he's going to be watched closely, monitored. You know, Jones has had injury problems dating back to Alabama, even high school for that matter. So, you know, he missed 11 games a year ago, 3 games his rookie season. Has been such a big producer, you know, more than 80 yards a game. Same kind of thing. Falcons just aren't the same team without him out on the field. Matt Ryan needs him. The Falcons need him. And, you know, they got to find a way to keep him healthy, and maybe a reduced practice schedule is the way to do it.
Other news out of Atlanta, and Arthur, I will turn to you for this. I know you got moved to the NFC North beat for USA Today Sports Weekly last week and this, but prior to that, we're on the AFC South at Pro Football Weekly. And Pat Angerer was a player you covered extensively with the Indianapolis Colts, a really good football player, productive, who just couldn't stay healthy. The Falcons have added him just before camp to compete with Tim Dobbins as they try and fill a huge void left by the Achilles injury to Sean Weatherspoon. They took a look at Nick Barnett and Jonathan Vilma, but decided that Angerer was the best bet along with Dobbins to compete for that spot.
Right, and you know, if these guys can stay on the field, mainly Pat Angerer, it could turn out to be a nice move. But like you said, that has proven to be tough. Kind of an undersized guy who really gets after it is always playing with a bit of a reckless abandon out there. So I think at least in terms of a fit, I think, you know, it should work with what the Falcons want to do. Tim Dobbins, another guy obviously coming from the AFC South and the Texans a long while there, and another pretty good player, an underrated player, but someone who's had a hard time staying on the football field. So, you know, we had talked about this in previous shows and maybe thinking the Falcons were going to try and develop from within. They had some guys who had to step up last year because of injuries, but obviously they've decided, at least in terms of depth, they want to improve the competition. They're going to bring in a couple outsiders and see how quickly they can get up to speed.
Hey, Eric, you know, you look at what's going on with the Cincinnati Bengals, and Geno Atkins and Leon Hall, both on the pup list right now. Marvin Lewis spoke out earlier this week, though, said he's confident they'll be ready for opening day, and it's possible, at least in the case of Hall, that they could even be moved off that pup list very early in the first week of training camp.
Yeah, I mean, this protects the NFL teams. They place the injured players on the pup list before the start of camp. That allows them, if there are setbacks along the way before they start the clock on practice schedule with these players, you know, to have their options. So I think it's more of a precautionary, safe thing for the Bengals. You saw what happened to that defense after Atkins left. I mean, they were just gutted. The pass rush wasn't the same. The run defense wasn't the same. Leon Hall, one of their top cover guys. So two key defensive players. You know, if they're going to make the playoffs a fourth straight season, try to win the division again, I think they need both these guys out there. So I believe Marvin Lewis when he says he's being cautious. If they miss the first preseason game or two, who cares? Just get them a little bit of rep later in the preseason, get them some practice time. They should be ready to go for opening day, I think.
Yeah, I apologize to our listeners who are saying, what are these guys, puppies, pup list? That's the physically unable to perform list. NFL vernacular that we sometimes assume everybody knows. Arthur, John Harbaugh, the head coach of the Baltimore Ravens, appears to be sitting there waiting for the pot to boil, and we know how difficult that can be to watch. He has acknowledged that the team is aware Ray Rice could be suspended. Now, he hasn't said that they expect it or that it's likely, didn't want to comment and didn't want to prejudice in any way the process or the thoughts of the commissioner's office, but they are saying, for all practical purposes, they expect Ray Rice to be suspended for his off-the-field problems, his assault charge against what now his wife is at the time fiance, and has said that he understands it is a process that has to run its course, but that he feels the Ravens need to know prior to that all-important third preseason game, because if he is going to be missing for any significant time at the beginning of the season, they're going to have to make alternative plans at running back.
Yeah, no question. They've got Bernard Pierce and the rookie Lorenzo Talaferro behind him. And with the Gary Kubiak offense, you know they're going to be using all these guys. They did sign Justin Forsett, who spent some time with Kubiak in Houston as well. But yeah, as far as Rice goes, I think we're all expecting some form of suspension. And as you said it, John Harbaugh acknowledged there are other big issues pending for the league and Commissioner Roger Goodell, obviously Jim Irsay and Alden Smith and Josh Gordon. The list goes on, unfortunately. So you know, that is why it has taken, or that's why he believes that it's taken as long as it has. But like I said, they're going to need him eventually. I think he is one of the most fascinating players entering this season, just coming off a disastrous year and an even more disastrous offseason. It's not long ago that he was the face of the franchise and known as just a good guy and one of the better players in this league. We'll see if he's able to recapture any of that magic once he's back on the field.
All right, guys, we've got to take another quick break, but we've got lots more news coming out of NFL training camps all over the league. We are back to talk a little bit about Pittsburgh, San Diego, and the Giants in a moment.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air.
We are that, and we are having a good time visiting with all of you as we go around NFL training camps. We'll be doing it for the next 5 weeks. And before you know it, opening night of the NFL season 2014 will be here. And during that season, the Pittsburgh Steelers will find multiple ways to honor the legend and the career and the life of one of the all-time greats, Hall of Fame coach Chuck Knoll, who passed away a few months back. And Arthur, the Steelers announced they're going to do something they've never done before, but all the players on the Pittsburgh Steelers this season will wear decals on their helmets with the initials CK in memory of their Hall of Fame coach.
And if there's anyone that you would do something like this for, as far as the Pittsburgh Steelers are concerned, I think it is absolutely Chuck Knoll. And, you know, obviously he is, passed on earlier this summer. This is their way of honoring him. And, I think it's a really cool thing. Just a man who's had as big an impact on that franchise as, you know, virtually anyone outside the Rooney family, obviously. So, you know, a really cool thing. I think there are more, ways of honoring him in the works as well. Those have yet to be revealed. But, yeah, I don't know what you could say that's not positive about this. Just an influential man in a really neat way to honor him this season.
Yeah, Arthur, the Rooney family has made clear this is just the beginning. There will be other special moments. There is a street outside the stadium named for Chuck Knoll. That was done some time ago, and there will be more to honor a legendary career. Eric, interesting news to me out of San Diego. It's hard to believe it was back in 2009, but it was a big deal when the Chargers took Larry English with the first, their first round pick, the 16th pick in the first round, because he came out of Northern Illinois. Now, NIU, of course, the nation's first BCS buster just two seasons ago, almost put another undefeated year together last year. And yet English, who was a defensive, a pass rushing linebacker, in college, they hope to make a pass rushing end or outside rush backer in their 3-4 defense. Never made the transition, and he has been released this week just prior to camp. Interesting, A, because you would think that English would have some value to another 3-4 team who just can't believe that a guy with those physical skills can't get the job done, but B, because it certainly signals that the Chargers are comfortable that Dwight Freeney this year will be healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when English came out and talking to a couple different scouts about him, and there was such a wide disparity of the view of him around the league. Some people thought he was undersized. Some people questioned whether he was durable enough to hold up against the run. And ultimately, those last two things proved true. You know, while he did have a few flashes in the NFL, he never could stay on the field and never turn into a complete player, only 11 sacks. But you're right. I mean, I think they're very comfortable with their top four now, assuming Freeney's healthy. You've got the veteran Jared Johnson there. If Freeney's back and can provide, you know, 30, 35 snaps a game, that's great. You know, they've got Melvin Ingram, who started looking like a star at the end of last season once he got back on the field. And they draft this kid in round two that I really like in Jeremiah Atachu from Georgia Tech. Interesting sort of same kind of path for him. You know, he's a college DN who's going to have to make that transition. But you watch him scream up the field and you see some real potential there. So, you know, all of a sudden, the San Diego defense, which is so much maligned for a lot of the year last year, really kind of coming together a little bit if all the pieces are healthy and, you know, sort of take that next step under John Pagano.
Arthur, it's interesting to me that in the new regime in Detroit with Jim Caldwell as head coach, the most quoted player on that football team, at least since May in the draft, has been their first-round pick, Eric Ebron. He was very vocal during the ruling and then the appeals by Jimmy Graham about whether he should be paid as a wide receiver or a tight end under the franchise tag. And now comes out, he has made his Twitter handle Pass Catcher, and he was asked about it. Is this further comment on your belief that you know, you're a hybrid tight end, that you're not going to be true to the position? And Ebron has said no, he's a tight end, but he does believe that his first responsibility is to catch passes, that he does think that the position has evolved, and he's all but come out and said that he's not a true tight end in the NFL sense. He hasn't said he won't block, but he clearly believes that he is there in Detroit to take pressure off Megatron and to catch the football.
Yeah, and that's clearly in line with the way the Lions view him right now. I mean, he is going to be a pass catcher first. They have one of the better inline blocking tight ends in the league and Brandon Pettigrew to pair him up with. So, you know, this is to me a little bit much ado about nothing. I think it's clear, as you said, that he has been as outspoken as any Lion over the past several months. And the people I'm talking to in Detroit would certainly agree with that sentiment. He is not going to be afraid to voice his feelings. But what was kind of funny to me, and no one denies his talent, he's going to have the ability, like you said, take attention away from Megatron and really stretch the field for Matt Stafford, but he had a little bit of a rough offseason, and some of the issues that that were kind of rumored, or not rumored, but reported on in college on the field, his inconsistent hands did bleed over into the first stages of his NFL career. So, you know, he wasn't going to put pass dropper in his Twitter handle, but that will be one big thing for us to watch for as the training camp moves on, is Ebron's hands that are going to need to become a little bit more consistent on an offense that really struggled catching the football for Matt Stafford last year.
All right, guys, another quick break here. I mentioned the Giants a few minutes ago. We get to him at the top of the next segment. A lot of free agency signings during the offseason. One a bit controversial. We'll discuss it. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. We want to talk about the New York Football Giants right now. And Eric, the Giants and GM Jerry Reese this past offseason were almost Belichickian, if I can make a phrase out of that, in their approach to free agency. A number of middle-of-the-road veterans, some potential starters, some depth, a bunch of new names, but not the big names that you're used to. And one of their key signings was offensive lineman John Jerry. Now, what is intriguing about this is that Jerry, of course, formerly the Miami Dolphins, and when the independent investigator Ted Webb completed his report about what went on in the Jonathan Martin situations, three players were named specifically, Richie Incognito, of course, Mike Pouncey, and John Jerry as players who may not have behaved appropriately relevant to Martin. Now, Jerry met the media in New York this past week for the first time, said that he does not intend to discuss the John Martin situation in public or with the media, but that he has discussed it extensively with his teammates and will continue to answer any questions they might have. Jerry's position is that both my former teammates and my new teammates know exactly who I am, that I'm a team guy, and that there's nothing to worry about here. Yet still, you know, interesting move by Reese to introduce that element into the New York media hotbed.
Yeah, and he's going to have to be a key part of this team all of a sudden, because Chris Snee has now retired. He's had health problems the last year plus, and, you know, has sort of reached the end of the road as a football player. So all of a sudden, John Jerry, who a lot of people speculated might not even get signed as a free agent, comes in and has a real good shot to be the starting right guard. They brought in Jeff Schwartz as well, left guard. So, you know, they're counting on these guys, and Jerry is going to have to put that incident behind him. It sounds like it's not a concern with his new teammates. He's kind of turned the page on it. And when you read the Wells report, what you sort of came away feeling is that, yeah, Jerry was culpable of a lot of things, but in no way was he the ringleader. This was not Richie Incognito. This was not Mike Pouncey. This was a guy who probably got sucked into it a little bit. I'm not absolving him from the responsibility here, but more that he was sort of a bit player in the deal. So if there was anybody of that group that probably didn't have as much responsibility, it was Jerry. So he gets a new chance. And like you said, this Giants team has a lot of reclamation projects on it. And I think they're going to sneak up on some people this year. I think they're going to challenge the Eagles for the division.
You know, I was thinking about this the other day. What do you think the conversation was like when Chris Snee walked into head coach Tom Coughlin's office and said, "Hey, Dad, I'm going to have to hang him up"? Because, of course, he is Tom Coughlin's son-in-law.
Yeah, a little different responsibility there. He said, "Well, now you got more time to take care of my daughter. That's obviously the biggest concern." But, yeah, I mean, Snee's given him 10 great years, 2 Super Bowl rings. It was sort of an underrated piece of that team. You know, you forget, but they faced a lot of, you know, a lot of people had questions about that kind of arrangement, because they, I think, if I'm not mistaken, were only dating when they first drafted him, or engaged or something like that. I don't believe they were married when the Giants took him in the second round. So it's worked out pretty well for him.
And, of course, Snee played for Coughlin at Boston College as well. I assume that's where they met. Great career for Chris Snee, and we hope he enjoys his retirement. Arthur, Dallas Cowboys, Jerry Jones. Actually, I think Jones has had a good offseason. He started to do the things you have to do to run an NFL team, even though some of them will be painful, because I think they're going to be one of the worst teams in the league this year. But he couldn't help himself by doing something to get headlines. Went out and traded for Rolando McClain. Now, of course, the knee injury to Sean Lee forces them to deal with that position. McClain unretires for the third time. Now, however, He apparently won't be there for the opening of training camp because he's going to be on trial in Decatur, Alabama for disorderly conduct and resisting arrest charges. His third arrest in Decatur since 2011. He's got to get through this trial, then get to camp, and then B, of course, the Cowboys will have to wait to hear from the league office to see if, in fact, he's available to them on opening day.
Right, and the good news is that the Cowboys aren't on the hook for anything if Orlando McClain does not make the final 53-man roster, so that's worth mentioning here. I think that this certainly is going to make it a little bit tougher. It's going to be a little bit more of an uphill climb for him. Really, the biggest relevance here might be for rookie Anthony Hitchens in front of him on the depth chart, and right now penciled in as a starter Justin Durant. These guys are going to get a chance to get additional reps and see what they can show. But yeah, as far as McClain goes, it was a curious trade at the time. It remains curious now, and we'll see if he's able to revive his career, one that he didn't seem interested in reviving on several occasions, and can give the Cowboys a boost this year. I'd say it's very much a long shot, was prior to this news, and is even a bigger one now.
All right, guys, another very quick break, but lots more training camp news. We're talking about the Bears, the 49ers, the Panthers. It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly. This is a big, big training camp season for the Chicago Bears in Bourbonnais, Illinois. While the Bears, in fact, in the first year under Mark Trestman, went from 10-6 in Lovie Smith's final year to Trestman's rookie campaign of 8-8, the offense was dramatically improved. Folks not used to a Chicago Bears team being second in the NFL scoring points. I think they may have been as high as fifth in passing. The best pair of starting wide receivers in the NFL, a Pro Bowl running back, and Jay Cutler at quarterback, and expectations are high in Chicago for the Bears. So it was interesting that Brett Favre visited with a Chicago radio station this past week and said that he believes that Jay Cutler is a Super Bowl quarterback, can be great, and may just be hitting his stride and hitting his prime at the age of 30. Now, Arthur, most of the other great ones got there sooner, but when Favre speaks, people do want to listen.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if Favre spoke to Cutler and shared some of his durability secrets over the years, because yeah. I think that that's many people's biggest reservation in sort of putting Cutler in that category, saying he has the ability to get there. Obviously, Brett Favre had experienced all kinds of success prior to turning 30 and had not missed a start since becoming a starter along the way. Jay Cutler has not been able to stay on the field. I think when he has been on the field, he's done well. Certainly last year showed Phil Emery enough in a fairly small sample size to convince him that he deserved the $54 million deal that he got this offseason. So, you know, I don't think anyone doubts the tools. I think that's mostly what Brett Favre is referring to here. But it's one of those things where once we see it, we'll believe it. Cutler has everything around him to be successful. Now he has to take that next step with Mark Trestman, with this this all-pro type offense, and show that he can do it at the age of 30.
And Eric, here's the other issue, is that while he may be 30, in fact 31, I believe, this season, Cutler has had maturity problems. He has not always been the best teammate on the sidelines in the locker room. He does appear to have matured significantly over the last year and a half or so. Maybe it's been marriage and fatherhood. He's got two children now. But with Cutler, it's never been about the physical traits. It's been more about the mental part.
I think you're right. You know, and from people breaking down his mechanics, which at times have been horribly flawed, to looking at his consistency, to looking at his leadership quotient, you know, all the intangible stuff put together that makes quarterback the hardest position in the NFL to play. And as you pointed out, I mean, yeah, you've got to have that physical ability. And I can't count on one hand the number of guys who have a better arm than Jay Cutler. He might have the best arm in the NFL. It's all that other stuff. Now, I think we saw less of the concerning stuff last year, as you said. Seemed to be a little bit more reserved, a little bit more mature, fewer of those crazy mistakes during games, but still work to do. Still a lot to prove this season, even with all that explosive stuff around him.
Arthur, interesting news out of San Francisco, where Joe Staley gets a new contract to be the 49ers' left tackle through the 2019 season. And what's interesting about it is he's been there, working hard, wanting the contract, getting the contract. Perhaps Alex Boone, Vernon Davis, two other key 49ers who are holding out for new deals, need to steal a lesson from that playbook. It could be the 49ers are saying, hey, guys, come in and we'll get something done.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, obviously Joe Staley wasn't, he was asked about the situations of Alex Boone and Vernon Davis. Like almost every NFL player, he declined to talk about another guy's contract situation, said every one of them are unique. But I fully agree with you. I think what made Staley's situation unique is that he has been a total team player, has been there since day one. This is actually the second large extension he has signed with the 49ers. So their hope is to keep him there throughout the entirety of his career, and obviously gave Kaepernick the huge deal. Now they've given his blindside protector the huge deal, and you know, Alex Boone is worthy of one as well. We've seen Vernon Davis has gotten paid before, like Staley, and wants to get paid again. So like you said, the first step has to be reporting and showing that, you know, before the money stuff, the team comes first.
All right, Eric, one more I'm going to let you comment on, because as you know, Ron Rivera is a dear friend of mine, a former broadcast partner, and the head coach of the Carolina Panthers has also now joined the Twitterverse. What I love about it is Ron chose as his handle at Riverboat Ron HC for head coach. Yeah, but I'm curious, Bruce Arians, Mike Tomlin, Pete Carroll, Sean Payton, other head coaches on Twitter, they are in the minority. What can an NFL head coach really accomplish by being on Twitter?
Not much. And, you know, we don't even know that that's Ron who's running the show on this Twitter account. A lot of these, you know, big name folks, you know, have other people who manage their accounts. And, you know, other than Carroll, of the guys you just mentioned, they're not too exciting to follow. I follow them, you know, and I pay attention when they tweet, but it's rarely anything controversial or outside the line. And, you know, I know Ron a little bit too. And, you know, anything he says in that vein is always way, way off the record. So he's pretty guarded for the most part. And I'll tell you what, Wade Phillips, a former NFL head coach, is a pretty funny follow. And, you know, he might be the closest thing to get to a head coach who actually says anything of note.
Ron Rivera, one of the best people in the NFL, yeah. No question about that. He's not likely to break any stories on Twitter. We take a quick break. We're back in a moment with the Publisher's Pen.
And now with the Publisher's Pen, here's Hub Arkish.
Well, Eric, we talked about it at the top of the show, and we've got to touch on it one more time, because while somewhat of a non-story, it was the biggest story in the NFL this past week as Tony Dungy spoke out. He wasn't speaking against Michael Sam. He simply said if it was him, he wouldn't have drafted him. Tried to give football reasons, realized that you can't escape the personal from the football in this situation, backtracked a little bit. But at the end of the day, he made a mess, and there's no getting away from it. Now, here's what is really interesting about that nobody was talking about. Michael Sam is at best a long shot to make the St. Louis Rams. He's a seventh-round draft choice. Most seventh-round picks don't make football teams. He is a guy who, quite frankly, completely, you know, irrespective of any sexual proclivity or any other off-the-field issues, was not a surefire NFL prospect. He did not do well at the combine. He wasn't overly impressive with his pro days. He's a great college player, but like so many great college players, may not have the unique skills for the NFL. Where am I going with this? There's a good chance that Michael Sam is going to be looking for a job in the NFL again very soon, if not at the end of this preseason, possibly next year. And Tony Dungy and others need to leave it alone. Let's let his football dictate his career, not anything off the field. That'll do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. For Dave Olson sitting in for Randy Meyer this week, great job as always engineering and producing. Our thanks as well to Syndication Network, and most of all, our thanks to all of you for being there. Join us again next week, same time, same station, for Pro Football Weekly.